It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 569 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, and welcome to 2023. Thanks so much for listening. This week we kick off the new year with writer and creator Christian Tropiano from Beyond the Beyond, a great science fiction miniseries. It's described this way. In Beyond the Beyond, we meet Nova Vega, a teenage idealist who resides in a mining colony run by the oppressive Omni Corporation. Instead of entering the Mining Academy, she'd much rather be out exploring the stars like her parents before her. Nova finally enacts her plan to escape the colony and explore the alien world from where her parents never return. We talk about the characters in the book, what it was like to create this title, and what we can expect from Christian in the future. An important disclaimer, I do help out Scout Comics, the publisher of Beyond the Beyond, behind the scenes, but I didn't have anything to do with this great comics creation. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show! It's great to welcome to the podcast Christian Tropiano, the writer and creator of Beyond the Beyond, which is a terrific science fiction book that came up recently from Scout Comics. In fact, issue 4 has just recently come out. Isn't that right, Christian?
Yep. Issue 4 is out, and you can get it now at the Scout Comics web store. It's probably the best place for PDF and physical.
Yeah, because it'd be a good thing to see. Now, I'm hoping. I don't want to discourage anybody from finding the individual issues, but I hope we get to see a trade collection, is what I'd really like to see. Because this is one of those books. I had the chance to sit and read it from issue 1 straight through to issue 4, and I really enjoyed it. And just a great, great story. So why don't you tell people what Beyond the Beyond is about? Christian.
Sure. Beyond the Beyond follows Nova Vega, who's the daughter of legendary space explorers Janus and Andromeda, who vanished on their final mission to find the next Earth. And since then, Nova's been growing up in a mining colony in deep space. And on this mining colony, it's ruled by a corporation called Omni, which is this robotics corporation that's kind of all-knowing, all-seeing, and this like oppressive force that just basically pisses Nova off, and you know she doesn't want to deal with them. She wants to go out and explore space like her parents before her, and she's always butting heads with her older brother and guardian Sirius. And eventually, an argument between the siblings goes too far, and she decides to run away from home and sets off to explore the alien world from where her parents never returned. So yeah, it's a pretty simple setup, but it's fun, and we have some great artwork. So. It's kind of the gist.
I love stories with female leads.
Yeah, and definitely.
I think that your female lead is one of the better because Nova is not necessarily like Captain Janeway or something like that. Mm-hmm. She is a real person much more. She is struggling with reality. One of the things that you show in the very first issue, she's there in class being taught by computers, by virtual reality. Thank you. We're going to see that shortly. I'm kind of sure in schools and things
totally.
That. And so when one of the little robots catches her, she's not necessarily paying attention. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, this little robot lets her have it. And it's kind of fun to see because I'm always fascinated to see how what the future looks like. And the interesting thing is where in the future do you think the story takes place? How many, do you have an idea? What day, what year?
I don't have a specific year because I want to keep it vague. Especially since like you've read the whole book and I think you might want to like, I think you understand why I want to keep it vague because it could be like very close to now, or it could be a few hundred years in the future. But I wouldn't say anything more than a few hundred years into the future, because especially at the rate that technology is going now, it's just, I think we'll really be able to break barriers soon.
Yeah, this might be old tech by the time this story.
Right.
Because it's funny, but I always like to ask, when it comes to Nova, did you pattern her after anybody you know, or is she a creation of your imagination?
Yeah, she's just kind of like, especially in this book and in the first book, she's basically me as a 16-year-old, how I was. And I wrote her initially, too, at the time. Like, I came up with this idea when I was in high school and just kept working on it for, like, 7 years since. And she just, like, it was a way of just kind of saying where I was at without being, like, on the nose and having the character look like me, or, like, or have it be set in modern times or whatever. And then from there, I just kind of took in this whole like space exploration route. But she's basically just a loner and just wants to just get away from her environment, just kind of find herself, and kind of her calling is to explore space. And like my calling was always just like be creative and just like be an artist, be a writer, whatever. So that's kind of like the, like how you can extrapolate it.
So how did the loss of her parents affect her?
Well, it's just that she kind of grows up without role models, and role models are super important. So she kind of clings to the memory of them and like their legacy, and kind of makes them even bigger, like than what they actually were. I mean, even though they were like fairly significant and very important to kind of humanity's continued like expansion into space, but she really uses them as kind of like a crush to fall back on, kind of like this her inspiration, and she just really wants to follow in their footsteps at the end of the day.
Okay, so she's kind of like overcompensating by trying to be like them.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like it's kind of comforting in a way to kind of have role models, whether they're present or not. And that's kind of, you know, the role they serve.
Mm-hmm. So what about Sirius? Is he a creation of your imagination, or is he based on someone you knew?
He's... He's more of, I would say, in my imagination, in the sense that Sirius is a foil to Nova. I wanted them to, Sirius to kind of believe in the opposite things as his sister. I wanted him to kind of take things at face value, kind of be pragmatic, not be so much of a dreamer, because Sirius has a lot of resentment of his parents. I mean, he thinks that since they decided to kind of run off, explore space and try to find the next Earth, that... that they kind of abandoned him and Nova, and that, you know, their explorations kind of like he blames them for, you know, their own disappearance really. And he resents that. And it's kind of be tough, you know, for an older brother to kind of take care of his younger sister, you know, even with all the technology they have in the story, it still kind of puts a lot of stress on you for sure.
Especially if she's kind of somebody who doesn't necessarily want to follow the rules like he does.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the things I really enjoyed too was they get to eat pizza, and the pizza, as the series is wiping his hands together, look forward to it, fresh off the printer he goes, and I was like,
yeah, yeah.
So there's again, you're talking. This is where we're probably headed in the future, and I'm not looking forward to eating stuff that the printer has printed out. So. Interesting. I love when the future is something we're not necessarily going right now, I'm interested in, and yet it's still likely to happen. So that's really something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's even that like little scene in particular with the 3D printer printing out pizza. It's funny because like it's like space food, right? I mean, space food can't really be like the way that you create space food or farm it is kind of like going to be unnatural. So I guess it's kind of the way it would be, you know?
Mm-hmm. So then there's other references, too, in the comics as we go along. I don't want to spoil anything that happens because it's a story I hope people get to read. And right off the bat, I have to say the art is really terrific. I understand your sister did one of the covers. Was it for the first issue?
Yeah, she did the variant for the first issue.
And what happens in that in her variant? What's it look like?
Her variant's basically... It's one of the antagonist robotic creatures having a tug of war with the native alien life form that's on the planet that Nova travels to, and that's the planet where her parents disappear and everything. So like by this like little alien creature and the robot having the tug of war is kind of like a metaphor for the story. It's like technology versus like nature, you know, like hearkening to what's going on now with Earth. It's just kind of extrapolating it to years in the future with that same sort of thing kind of repeating itself.
So who did the regular cover for the first issue?
That was Farah Nurmaliza. You can find her on Instagram. She's great. She usually works in like a painted style. And I hopefully can use her for the second book because that would be great. She's awesome. I love that cover.
Second book? I mean, you want to do a follow-up to the series?
Yeah, I really do. I really just kind of want to at least do another one. At least do one more book. I mean, whether it's going to be a whole 130 pages, probably. So I'll probably have to do a Kickstarter for that. But hopefully in the very near future, I can get going with that. I started scripting it now, too. So,
because I really enjoyed this story. I thought it was a great science fiction story. The great science fiction stories to me always have a personal element to it, mm-hmm. where we get to understand ourselves and either that or the people in the story. And I really, really enjoyed that because I thought we really get a lot out of her and her brother. And I don't want to spoil things, but let's just say that there are other things that we get to explore besides them.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely talk about like the alien world and everything. I mean, I feel like that's definitely. I feel like it's called the Misty Planet, and it's called that because it's like I like to describe it as Cloud City, but without the city. And instead of like having solid ground, there's just like floating islands and like weird alien creatures that are usually like sea creature based. And they kind of just, I don't know. It's just, I feel like the Misty Planet is so unique that it's like a bit major character in itself.
Do you want to talk about what they find on that planet?
Yeah, it's just kind of Omni's there, that's for sure. The robotics corporation is definitely has plans for the Misty Planet, and it becomes, you know, a battle of nature versus technology. But it's done hopefully differently than the ways you're kind of used to these themes being explored. I really like painstakingly try to just make everything very strange and specific to this world. You know, everything from like the world to the creatures on the world and kind of the type of like sentient, like more intellectual alien creatures that are on this world. You know, I tried to be just kind of, you know, go beyond from what you've usually seen with these sort of stories.
Okay. And they also find out they're not alone. That character, I'm always interested where people get the idea for the character. Mm-hmm. Is he another something you came up with?
Sergey, the CEO.
No, I was thinking of Alejandro de Sol.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, he's great. He was just this kind of like, he fills in for the mentor figure that Nova's always wanted to have her whole life. And he's someone who, even, you know, was an explorer back in the day around the same time as her parents. And he's just someone for her to kind of learn from, kind of like this Obi-Wan Kenobi type figure, really. And she does learn a lot from him. And I really do like their relationship, how it's kind of like a surrogate father thing in a way. But he's also very like, he's wise too. I always love writing his like wise little tidbits and sayings he'll have, and kind of like bouncing that off of like the naive like exuberance of Nova, and her like her passion versus his wisdom is always like a fun little dynamic to write.
Because like in the third issue, he turns to her and says, "You got this whole explorer thing down, huh?" Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I thought was great. That was a great way to start a conversation with her,
right?
Because that's the kind of thing. She's always going to be interested in all those things. I have to ask, I'm kind of interested in that the spaceships kind of look like Earth ships, you know, like on the sea kind of ships and stuff like that. Was that what you had in mind, or did the artist come up with that?
No, that's what I had in mind. And it was, you know, I wanted people to get the idea of like what these characters were right away. So it's not like, you know, this isn't like a hard science fiction novel. Like, I guess you can call it like a space exploration, space opera or whatever.
But the ships are basically designed to look like 16th, 17th century, like explorer ships, but like retrofitted with like turbo boosters and like solar panels and like more of a sci-fi thing. And yeah, it's just so you can get an idea of like who these characters are and like what they do right off the bat.
Pretty cool. And of course, they call them iBots, the little robots that follow them and, yes, and kind of advise them along the way. I kind of like that, the little eyes floating around in space, which, yeah, I kind of find spooky. I have to say, if I had an eye looking over my shoulder all the time, I wouldn't know if I liked that so much.
Well, the thing is that you do. It's just your phone, in a way, if someone taps into it, you know, that's kind of what I was going for there. It's like the iBots are kind of like based around like the camera design of the iPhones. And there is that little subplot in the story where it's, you know, the iBot that's been following over around like her little pal there isn't really her pal. And I was kind of making little metaphors there, you know, to today.
I like the fact that she comes. Oh, I don't want to spoil stuff, but let's just say that Nova actually kind of finds something that she was kind of looking for, and her reaction to it is kind of interesting to me. You know, it has something to do with Alejandro and stuff, so that, mm-hmm, that causes a little conflict between the two of them, and it's fun to see that because he has so far been like you're right, like a mentor, and suddenly, mm-hmm, she's not quite happy with him. And mm-hmm, I kind of like that change in the relationship,
yeah,
which was something that was, you know, people always expect that they always say, don't meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. And this is a case where she's kind of unhappy with her hero.
And yep.
I like that. I thought that was really well done. I like that writing. You cover a lot of ground in the four issues.
Thank you. We do. They're outsized issues. They're like 40 pages. Issues 2 and 3 are 40 pages, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's really good. I love an exercise story when I can dive in and get that all and just go into the story for a while and learn some stuff. So it's so well done. It really is. How did you find the artist for the book? Was that person online or?
Yeah, John's online, but he doesn't really like social media. Like, I don't think I'd be like stretching to say that. Like, you could find him, John Fernando, if you type it on, I think on Twitter or Instagram, you should be able to find him. But he's like Banksy. He doesn't really post anything. And it's funny too, because he doesn't really need to post anything because he's so talented that work just finds his way to him. And like, I met him like years ago on like this online forum called Digital Webbing. I don't know if you've ever heard of Digital Webbing, mm-hmm, by any chance.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Yeah. So I don't know if people still use it to this day, but it was like a great place to just meet artists, like writers seeking artists. And that's where I met him. And basically I had submissions going. I was like, all right, here's the idea for my project. And anyone who wants to kind of, you know, do the job, send me an email. And I got so many replies. But once John submitted his submission, I was going to take submissions for like another few days. And then I just cut it off. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to see other people. Like, I like this guy a lot. And then we've been like partners on this ever since. And I really hope I can work with him in the future because John's great. He's really the next big thing. He could just like, it's just amazing because he's based in the Philippines and I'm all the way in New Jersey and you could drill a hole through the earth and then maybe I'll meet him. But it's just like, he knows what's in my head, even just from like email or just like Google image reference images. He just takes the raw idea and just like makes it 3D. And I got really lucky with him. I'm very grateful.
Yeah. His choice of stuff. And not only that, the color. Mm-hmm. The choice of colors are really good too, because you've got, you know, the holographic ones are obvious by the color. Mm-hmm. The ships, the smaller ships are more real colored, but then, mm-hmm, the bigger ones are dark and foreboding. And, mm-hmm, I like that about them, that it's, you know, space. I always enjoyed in Star Trek The Next Generation when Q came along and said, mm-hmm, to them, it's dangerous out there. And I always, yeah, thought that, you know, that was the one fault I had with Next Generation, was that they just kind of were shipping things around and they never actually ran into a lot of danger. And if they got into a bad situation, they would say, oh my gosh, we got to get back home as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was very different from the original Star Trek. So when I see how dangerous space is in your book, I like that. I think that's something really important to do.
Yeah, I really like that observation. And, you know, that's something I haven't really even, like, thought about, I guess, in a while. But you're right. Like, there's definitely, like, Nova has a destination to get to, but, like, the way of getting there isn't easy. There's definitely a lot of roadblocks in the way. And, yeah, it's just, like, nature in general isn't necessarily hospitable. You kind of have to conquer it, you know.
Not, especially not in space, yeah, where it's cold and there's no air and stuff like mm-hmm. that. I like the fact that this refers to that and lets people know that, yeah, you might want to go out there, but, and it's romantic to go out and explore space. But as the parents discover, it's not always safe. Way to go. Yeah. Which I yeah. like. Now talk about Julian Price, if you would too. He comes in and I think the third issue.
Yes, the third issue. You got it.
And he's a friend of Sirius's, right?
Yes, an ex-best friend of Sirius's. And that was definitely from a real-life experience. And an old friend of mine who was toxic, that was the inspiration for that character. I just translated a little bit differently, for sure. And it's funny because that plot line wasn't always there until, like, I kind of got older and older and I was like, okay, I want it, like, because originally Sirius was going to be fighting off bounty hunters who were going after him, but it felt kind of goofy and it didn't feel personal enough. But with Julian, you know, Julian is this guy who's Sergei's second in command now, Omni, and he's a young guy in his early to mid 20s, like Sirius. And, you know, unlike Sirius, he calls it the golden ticket. Like Sergei Page, who's the leader of Omni, is given him this opportunity to kind of terraform this alien world and, you know, have a high ranking position with power and wealth and all that. And, you know, and he's going to, Julian makes a decision to kind of go in that direction than siding with his old friend in Sirius, because Julian has this line where he's like, you know, I've made a life for myself now and you had a chance to make something for yourself back at the colony. So he's like, try not to take this too personally. I'm just doing my job. That kind of best sums up his whole persona. And yeah, I don't know. I had a friend that I was close with, but I'm not friends with anymore. And I just kind of took in this different way, but the sentiment's still there, you know, like betrayal and whatnot.
Right, right. So see, that's a good thing that the people are still people out in space.
Right, right. Absolutely. Flaws and all.
That's a good thing. It's nice to see stuff. So, okay. Issue number 4 has come out and I just screams Sci-Fi Channel show to me.
Oh, really? TV, you think?
I think so. I especially the way that the art portrays it. I can see it. You ever see the show The Expanse?
Andrea, our editor at Scout Andrea, recommended me that. I'm going to watch it like right after we get off. Because now I've had so many people recommending it to me. I need to watch it.
It has that feel.
Okay.
Which yeah. If you get a chance to watch that, you will, especially like the cargo areas and the places where they're running the ships and stuff like that. It really does work. And I would love to see that on Sci-Fi. I just feel like this could really work.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I always did see it as a film as well. Like, funnily enough, it started off as a film screenplay, but then, like, just as a screenplay by itself, it's boring because you can't really see the world. So I was like, I'll turn this to a comic book. And, like, no matter what happens, the comic's going to be sick because this story works very well as a comic as well. And I don't know. I always thought of, like, if it's going to be adapted, I always thought, like, a feature film. Like, if I could do a trilogy of feature films and, like, beat out Star Wars, that would be cool. You know, why not?
That would be good. But I have to say, Star Wars is on the decline, so it could be well.
I'm telling you, there's a gap in the marketplace, and, like, I don't know. Give us a shot. Beyond the Beyond, yeah.
I think it could happen. Now, I got to ask, why did you call it Beyond the Beyond?
It's funny, because, like I was saying about, like, the trilogy, I was like, okay, the first one could be called Nova, and the second one could be called this, Starlight City. That's where the second one is going to take place, but I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. And the third one could be Beyond the Beyond. So I was like, okay, and the third one, when I write the third book, we're going to be doing crazy, like, interdimensional stuff. And then I thought to myself, I was like, okay, the title of Nova is really boring. I was like, Beyond the Beyond is sick. I was like, why don't I just call this whole series Beyond the Beyond? And then I'll just have subtitles for whatever, like, the new world is. I don't know. It's just like, you could take it for its literal meaning, like, yeah, we're going, like, we're seeing things beyond what you'd normally see in day-to-day life. Or you could just take it as, like, a really cool spacey title, whatever you want, you know?
I've got to, as I'm looking at the issues as I go down the covers, mm-hmm. at the beginning, the Beyond are on top of each other. And then by the time we get to the fourth issue, they're not.
They're yeah. Separate. We had two versions of the logo, and in the print versions, what I decided to do was to have the split logo for the cover so people could read it more clearly. Mm-hmm. And then for the interior cover, if you open it up to the interior, it has the overlapping logo, which is more trippy, and you kind of have to, you know, peek at it harder to see the Beyond. Mm-hmm. It was just, it was like a fun variation, I thought. Like, I don't know. It's like just to have two versions of the logo, and they kind of work either way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's obvious that there's two because the color differences are in there. So that's really good with that. So how long did it take you to put this whole thing together? You were saying about a couple of years.
Oh boy. The writing was ongoing until this year. I mean, because you're always editing, right? Like, I'm sure you know, you've told me that you've edited comics as well. It's just the writing never ends until the print book's out, and then it's there. But the main plot was really done around like 2019, and we started production on the first issue in 2018. It just kind of, we took a hiatus in like 2019, and then we kind of wrapped it up 2020, 2021. So I'd say about 4 years of actual, like, of the artwork on the comic to now. It's, in total, it was freaking 130 pages, so it's a lot of work, you know, for sure.
Now, is this your first comic, or have you done ones before?
This is my first one published and everything, so I was definitely lucky enough to have my first one be published. Shout out to Brendan and everyone at Scott Comics, who I was happy to meet everyone at New York Comic Con. Everyone's so awesome. Everyone, it's such a, like, a positive community. But yeah, it's my first published work for sure.
Now, the cool thing, because I was there, I got to see you be on Scout's Whatnot show. What was that like for you? Was as far as doing, because like Whatnot's turning into quite the big thing. And what was it like to be a guest on the show like that?
It was so fun, and it's funny too because I wasn't expecting to do it going in there. I was like, you guys just kind of test on me, really, right? I was the first one to kind of test out the live stream, and
right.
And then I did it the next day too. But I was nervous at first, and some of the commenters on the live stream were like, "Oh, he looks nervous." But then afterwards, it seems like I really had like a rapport going, and I just kind of was able to just repeat my spiel over and over again, which was just good because you kind of have to know how to do that in this industry, how to just like pitch your book super fast. So it was definitely it was fun, and you know, I've had like people DM me like from that, and we definitely sold a lot of books on there, so I was very happy about how it turned out, and it'd be cool to do that again.
And you got to sign a lot of books too.
Yeah, signing a lot of books and then remarking the books with Richard.
Yeah, that was fun. You hadn't remarked before, right?
No, I had no idea that was even a thing. I was like, desecrate my books. Oh no, it was fun. We put like mustaches on the characters on the cover, and we put like top hats, and Richard's definitely a better artist than I am, so he put more detail than I could have.
Well, he's been remarking longer than you have, that's for sure. He of course, he does Dabity Bunny, and he often takes the cover of some of them, and he turns Dabity Bunny into like a bat bunny. He could draw like Batman costume on top of him and stuff like that. Boy, the one thing is you've probably discovered, as he has discovered, is that remarking sells books. It's shocking, but it does.
Yeah, no, I mean, people loved it. And it was fun. Like, honestly, I love to desecrate my books further if that's what the people want. Like, let's just do it, whatever they want.
But you have to look at it like a collector. A collector mm-hmm. looks at this as, like, this is something you've made this book unique. Mm-hmm. This issue that you've done, it's particularly if it's your first remark, oh my gosh, collectors are going to fight for that. Because they want that.
There's a lot of like exclusivity in this industry. It's like things, variants, obviously, and just anything that can be exclusive is obviously like way more valuable. People really like collecting, you know, collecting is fun.
I'll tell you a quick story because I'm the editor for Dabity Bunny. And we were in, I think it was Savannah, if I'm not mistaken. And I, you know, I'm helping at the booth and stuff's going on. And this collector comes up and he wants to know what he can do to make you know, the Stabney issue more collectible. And he's going around talking to people, and he goes to me, he says, "Oh, who are you?" I said, "Well, I'm the editor. Have you ever signed one of these books?" I said, "No, I've never signed it. I'm just the editor. Editors like Batman. We prefer the shadows. We don't want to."
Right.
He says, "Quick, sign this book." "What?" He says, "Sign the book for me." Okay. So I signed the book for him, and he ran off to CGC, and he showed it to me later. It says, "First signature by editor Wayne Hall."
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I got a kick because, you know, you never know what collectors are going to treasure and what they're going to want. And, you know, my feeling is if it makes it, more accessible and more interesting to people, then I'm all for it. Luckily, they've never asked me to draw. That's the good news. You did a better job of drawing than I could do. So I was happy to see that. I thought that was
cool. I don't know about that. Mine was pretty chicken scratch-esque, but yeah, that's a great story. I love that. I mean, because you're the editor of the whole series, right? So, I mean, that's pretty important role. So, I mean,
I make sure the commas are in the right place. I always have to tell my old favorite story. There's a difference between "Let's eat, comma, grandpa" and "Let's eat, grandpa."
Yeah.
And I have to make sure those are in there. You don't know how many people I have to tell that to now. And then they go, "Oh, yeah, commas. Commas are important." A friend of mine gave me a shirt and said, "Punctuation saves lives." And when it came to that, and so I'm always, you know, I think that editors' jobs are to make it so that there are no bumps in the road when you're reading a book. You know, you shouldn't come into something and say, "Wait a second, what are they trying to say here? I have to figure this out." If you give people enough bumps in the road, they will just, "Ah, heck with it," and throw the book aside. So yeah. Your book luckily does it's all nicely put together. And I'm, you know, somebody who enjoys reading, especially science fiction. I was so grateful I got to read all four at once.
Yeah, thank you.
Man, such a nice experience.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy too, because you're the first person I've had an interview with that's read all four issues. And it just makes me happy to hear it, because it sounds like you really like latched onto it, and just like, it just sounds like you get the characters and everything. And just, I don't know. It makes me very happy as a writer, because obviously like so much work has been put into this. I just want as many people as possible to kind of have the same experience you've had, you know?
See, the thing that's interesting about creating comics, and people don't understand this, you are often by yourself writing.
Yep. Yeah,
you're doing. You're probably sitting on a computer screen typing and doing things, and then you get something done. Mm-hmm. And then you like hand it off, and if the artist gets involved, and the artist usually by themselves are drawing and stuff. And then you get to see what they've done. And you like what they've done. That's great. But then the time comes to put the first book out on the stands.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you knew the first issue was hitting the stands?
It was, it felt really cool. I don't know. It felt like just bringing it out into the world. It made it feel so legitimate, you know, literally, because it's literally in comic stores. Like I have a family in California that they sent me a picture. They're like, "Oh, look, it's our LCS here." I was like, "Oh, that's so sick." And they got all four issues too eventually. And it's very cathartic. It's just like the stamp on all your hard work. And I really, I'm glad how you brought up, how isolating it could be writing. Just being creative in general, it can be a very isolating thing. And it's especially too when you're working online with people via email. Like it's cool to talk over email, but it's not like you're at like a studio, you know, or anything. So,
right. You don't get the chance to actually unless you use like a Zoom call or other calls like that to give you a video. A lot of people don't. They just go by email DMs and things like that. And they don't get the chance to actually interact and get a response. I will tell you one other thing that I thought was kind of interesting. When I work with Richard on Stabbity Bunny, he doesn't give me the whole script. He gives me page by page.
Oh, wow.
And what he wants is he wants my reaction to the page. How did this work? How'd that work? And there have been times when I said to him, there was one time he was doing a book. It was a superhero takeoff. And he gave me this one page. And he said, "This should be really funny." And I read the thing and I came back to him. I said, "I'm sorry, it's not funny enough. If you want this really funny, you should really make it funnier." he went back and rewrote it, and it was much funnier when he came. And I kind of felt like that's the kind of thing that some creators really, it's helpful to them to know what the reaction is to the page by somebody who doesn't, I don't know where the story's going. I don't know where it's going to end and stuff like that. And so I enjoy those kinds of things. I don't know if you have anybody that can help you with that, but for me, I found it, he found it really helpful when I say to him, okay, this works, I like this, and this surprised me, and things like that, he gets immediate feedback, which I think saves him from waiting until it hits the stands and people going, I didn't get that. I don't understand what happened in that.
Yeah.
So he's happy.
I never realized the value of an editor until I had one, because again, this is like my first book, and Scout's main editor, as far as I think, is Andrea Molinari. And he's also the writer of his own comic series, which is really sick, called The Shepherd. And he's just really smart. And he even like helped me out so much that some of the things we were talking about over the phone gave me ideas for the sequel to this graphic novel. And it's so helpful. And I don't, you know, no one should ever take it personally. And it's not like about any editor or Andre or, you know, is overly critical or harsh about it. It's just kind of like an objective take on, okay, this works, this doesn't work, this is great. And you just kind of wing it from there and just try to make the book as accessible as possible to people.
Well, and you want your editor hopefully is giving you advice that somebody else might give you when they read it. He's like one of the first line of defense when it comes to that. He's going to tell you his reaction to it. This is like kind of what I gave Richard and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so helpful to somebody who is in solitary writing.
Oh yeah,
and doing stuff. When you get somebody's reaction, man, I always think, you know, my biggest problem I have is that when I tell people, you know, you didn't do the your commas aren't in the right place, or you missed something there, they say to me, "Can you proofread my book?" Well, I could, but I've got a lot of other things I got to do. I can't proof everybody's book that I talk with, and so I always have to tell them, "Look, find somebody that you trust." And have that person give you feedback. That's the best way. But you said something that I find really interesting about that. You shouldn't take it too personally when somebody gives criticism. There are people who believe that their pen drips gold is the best way I can describe it.
Really? Yes.
Still? Oh yes. There's one person in Hollywood. I could name names, and okay, well, I'll name names, and I don't know if you know who J. Michael Straczynski is.
I do. What did he write again?
Babylon 5.
Okay.
He would write the scripts, and nobody would proofread them or anything. He would send them down to the actors, and they'd have to memorize them and shoot them. No response. No going on about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a dislike to that.
There was no writer's room there?
No, he was the writer.
Oh, wow.
He was the writer. He was the only one in the writer's room, as far as that goes. So I think today we have reached a place where we need to be open to suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like what you went through with Andrea is important, because Andrea is not there to try to bring you down a peg. He's there to make your book even better than you did.
Mm-hmm.
And not many people understand that. So I'm glad you went that. I say this to you, and I say this to everybody, don't take it personally if somebody comes back with a suggestion or important suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you want your book to really do well and be well received, take advice without taking it too personally, because
something that
could make a huge difference in your book. There's a certain book I know when I read it, I said, no, that didn't go, something, that's not right. Something didn't work right in that book. And I went back to the I knew the person who was the editor, and I spoke to him, and I said, why did this happen? And they said, that's what the writer wanted, but every one of us tried to talk him out of it, but we couldn't do it. Yeah. And I said, well, it would have been better had they not gone that way, because It's did you ever watch a movie and something happens and it pulls you out of the movie and you're back in the theater watching a movie?
Yeah, I probably. Nothing comes immediately to mind, but probably I could see that happening.
I can give you a good example. I was watching a Rocky movie where he's in what was then the Soviet Union. He's boxing against this guy. And he manages somehow, even though this guy is hopped up on steroids and all this kind of stuff, he manages somehow to beat him. And what do they do in the Soviet Union? They give him an open mic. Now, the Soviet Union is never going to give an American an open mic.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
That's true.
That's when that happened, I was like, whoop, and I'm back in the theater going, oh, rats.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of thing. See, that's if an editor is a good editor, an editor will do that so that they don't pull the reader out of the book. See, when I read that, that pulled me out of the book, and I had to go and find out. Wait a minute. That don't make sense the way that is. So, yeah. I always be open to suggestions and things like that. So okay. Yeah. So Beyond the Beyond number 4 is out, so you can get the whole story now. Hopefully word will come out that there is the trade collection will be happening. As far as keeping up with you, like on social media and stuff like that, how do we do that?
You can follow me on Twitter at CTROP324. And my Instagram is that as well. And yeah, that's the best place to keep up with me. For my comic, in terms of promotion, I'm more active on Twitter though.
Okay, are there other projects you're working on that we should know about?
Yeah, I'm always writing. I've got the sequel to this thing fully outlined, just kind of in the process of scripting it, and then I'm also working on like a film screenplay as well. And you know, for these things too, it's funny. Like, I can't wait to get like some masterpieces by an editor because it's definitely going to need everything's going to need editing soon. So,
well, that's you know what that's, and sometimes you're your own best editor. You can go back and read. And you can, when you go back, oops, I didn't mean to do that. There are, I can think of a better way to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So you might want to go back over it again, just to kind of, although the bad news is when you're an editor, and I'm sorry to talk about editing so much, but when people read this or anything a couple of times, by the third or fourth time, you don't see the problems anymore.
It's true. It's so true.
I've had so many times when I've done that, and people say, well, why did you miss that? Well, you know, I've read it so many times now, my brain just sort of goes past all that. So it's good to limit what an editor can do. And of course, you going back over your script too will be have the same problem after a while. So,
For sure.
So are you going to do more science fiction? Is that what you're aiming to do?
Oh, absolutely. I really only write in science fiction. That's kind of my niche. It's science fiction first, and then whatever other kind of genre you want to pinpoint it at comes second. So I guess Beyond the Beyond would be like sci-fi adventure and whatnot. Or maybe I could write something that's sci-fi horror or something, you know, along those lines. Yeah, sci-fi is my thing.
Oh, cool. Well, and, you know, I always say good writers can branch off into other things when you feel comfortable and you've done enough science fiction for the moment. You might want to branch out and do some short stories in other genres and stuff. But if you're good at science fiction, you want to do that for now, boy, I would stick to it because Beyond the Beyond is a great story, something that I think people will really enjoy. It's always funny to say, but sometimes the best science fiction stories are human in nature. And that's what your book is. Beyond the Beyond is very human. Even though you've got printers printing pizza and stuff like that going on, you've still got a lot of human development and changing going on in the characters. So that's what make one of the things I think is going to make Beyond the Beyond. The science fiction is always going to be great. It's always going to shine. But having the characters grow and go places and things develop and stuff like that just makes this book a real standout in my mind. So I hope people can get a hold of it. It's such a great book. And I was so thrilled to be able to read it. Like I said, I was lucky in that I was able to read them, the PDFs all at once. which was great fun for me. I love to be us. And I let me throw one more quick thing in there. Hmm. Endings are tough in comics.
Yes, they are. Yes,
I have read so many miniseries and comics where I blaze through the thing and I get to the end and I go, oh, it's over. And yours, I didn't do that.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That really means a lot.
I literally got to the end and I'm thinking, now what? Now what? Now what?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen next? That's the kind of ending I really like. A certain House of Ideas does that to me all the time. I get the miniseries, there's huge hype. This is going to be the best thing that Marvel has, has ever done. And then I get there and 4 or 5 issues into it, everybody is kind of like, oh, it's still going. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I get to the end, and the end is just, I go, oh, it's over. And then, of course, when that hits, they are hyping the next miniseries. So I hate that. There's nothing worse than a story that ends poorly, particularly if it's a miniseries. You've got to, if you want to be remembered by people, especially fans, have a good ending, doggone it. End it well, make it something worthwhile reading. And that's the way Beyond the Beyond is. That the first 4 issues are really great, and I am looking forward to the second series of them. So it's great. I think, Christopher, you've done a wonderful job. Wetting my whistle, at least, and I'm sure a lot more people for Beyond the Beyond 2, or however you want to call it, because it's just a great book that is.
I can give you the name. It's Beyond the Beyond 2, Starlight City. That's where we're going, and it's gonna be a city in space. That's all I could really say. I guess that would make sense.
That's a perfect follow up to being out in no man's land.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
That was, in fact, Star Trek did that. Star Trek had Next Generation, where they went all over the galaxy and suddenly they were on a space station in Deep Space Nine. So that is a perfect science fiction way to go.
I'm gonna find that episode now, because I've watched some of TNG, and now I want to find that episode, see if I can steal anything from there.
Well, as I always say, if you steal from the best, that's the way to go. Don't steal from the worst. Steal from the best.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff. Good talking with you. And we'll have to talk again when the next series is starting to come out and talk about some more stuff, see what you're up to. So great stuff. I hope people can get number 4 and get all the issues, frankly, and be able to sit down and read them and make good things happen, because this, we need more good science fiction. So just keep it up.
Thank you, Wayne. I really appreciate it. You've been so thoughtful, and just like, again, having read the whole series and everything you said has been just so great, so encouraging. It was great to meet you at the convention too. Hopefully we could do that again soon.
I'm looking forward to that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for another episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be back next week, but until then, keep reading your comics.